The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so what I wanted to talk about. So the question came in. The person wrote, how can I be more confident and self-loving? And what does meditation have to do with that? My social anxiety extends even to Zoom meetings, and I feel so tired of this lifelong affliction. So we begin with acceptance and change. Marsha Linehan famously, acceptance can transform, but if you accept in order to transform, it is not acceptance. It's like loving. Love seeks no reward, but when given freely, comes back 100-fold. She who loses her life finds it. She who accepts changes. So to whoever asked that, my first thought is to have a moment of love with your symptoms, just complete non-resistance, a kind of zero pressure to change, to grow, to improve, any of it, just non-resistance, and begin there and return there as you change, as the journey involves change. And then have a moment of undefended pain, you know, with the confinement of your symptoms, right? Just undefended. And that's very different than hating your mind. It's very different than flailing or self-pity. It's actually feeling the suffering in a unadulterated way. Something is just like, okay, it just doesn't work for my heart anymore. And let it burn in, feel the burn, the kind of pain, and let that actually leave a mark. You know, it's important suffering to feel. Don't, you know, in other words, don't wiggle out of it or don't blunt the impact. If you kind of quickly then say, like, okay, now I must change, you're not really feeling it. Stay longer, linger. Let it kind of break you down open. And we suffer, but we tend not to suffer vividly. We tend not to experience our suffering with vivid clarity, and that's part of what's called for. So social anxiety, you know, it's like whether one's socially anxious or not, other people are a big deal. Like we act like they're not, but they are. There's a developmental pediatrician who noted that there are generally only two pairs of beings that gaze effortlessly into the eyes of the other: lovers and a baby and their parent, caretaker. And so for like 3 seconds, it's okay. I have to be careful. Meditation has not been good. You know, I kind of want, you know, the Costco cashier's eyes. I just want to have a moment. But we're like 4 seconds away from disaster. 3 seconds, no problem. That's kind of sweet, poignant. 4 seconds. That's how we live, you know? like very elaborate rules about the nature of connection, intimacy, intrusiveness, boundaries, all of it. It's a big deal. A colleague, Giselle Jones, defined intimacy as the willingness and the ability to see and be seen. And if we are to be delighted and enriched and healed by others, we must risk being seen in our desperation. And if we're to be delighted, enriched, healed by others, we also must risk being seen in our goodness. Social anxiety is centered around the fear of negative social judgment. You may have a judgment of me, but more recently it's been appreciated that in social anxiety there is a fear of positive judgment too. And in a way, maybe you could say that social anxiety involves the fear of being an object in the mind of the other. A fear of being an object, being objectified in the mind of the other. The philosopher Sartre said shame is something like the experience of being a pure object, a pure object, kind of subjectivity flattened, a pure object in the mind of another. And we can ask, you know, okay, what does it feel like? What does it feel like in this moment to have this theory of mind, this mentalization process whereby I'm imagining the way you're modeling me? And so we investigate the way it's both a fear, social anxiety is a fear of negative evaluation, but also just a kind of more basic sense of maybe the shame of being objectified. I don't mean objectified in a sexual sense or something like that, but just being an object, the mind of another. And all of this is playing out in the land of thought and projection. And so we can kind of believe the most dangerous things. And people with social anxiety tend to be poor mentalizers, meaning that they mistake the internal states of others. And some of the work is actually better calibrating the views that others have, how they're perceiving you, what is in their mind. Some of it is about that. But some of it has to be independent, you know, like who cares what they take me to be? Even if your worst fears were right, they thought all the worst things, the most devastating things. You're being asked to acclimatize to the pain of that, to habituate to it, and to disconfirm that there are any catastrophic effects from it. You have to imagine your exile in order to know your true belonging. And so we investigate, okay, what's the most tragic thought a person could have of me? And then we just kind of bathe and luxuriate in that thought until it's boring. It might be a long time till it's boring. But when it's boring, you know you've drained the kind of affective charge through mindfulness, equanimity. And I know this is asking a lot. And I don't know who it is and who asked the question. No idea. But it's from the tone of the question. It's time. It's time. And you'll never feel totally ready. You actually have to jump. The body has to move some ways ahead of the mind and the sense of readiness. When you look into someone's eyes, like, are you aware of seeing or being seen? Socially anxious folks are all seen. They lose their center, their belly, they lose the ground. Yeah, in a Dharma training thing I've mentioned before, I got paired up with somebody and it was like 15 minutes of silent eye gazing, you know? And I was with a friend and somebody I felt very warmly about, and there would be these flashes of self-consciousness, this congealing of the self, where all of a sudden I became an object. I became an object in her mind. I became an object in my mind, and it dulls the connection and the openness, right? And then I would like, that would actually dissolve, and I would forget myself and abide in space. And I could not tell if I was behind my eyes or behind hers or nowhere. So, social anxiety illuminates the kind of unbearable fragility of egoic life. The world becomes a kind of stage and everyone a critic. Fuck that. Not here for that. We weren't born for that. You know? We all die too soon, you know? Shame, often say, is the underbelly of self. Wherever there's self, there can be shame. Everything you take to be me, to be or to own, that needs to be loved to death. Self-acceptance is one thing, but anatta is the only kind of true form of self-esteem. It's the deepest form of self-acceptance. And understanding anatta creates the simultaneous sense of being totally seen and being, in some sense, invisible. You know, Wonder Woman, as I recall from childhood TV, had a invisible plane. Although it was drawn with outlines, kind of like whitish gray outlines, if my memory serves me. Anyway, I digress. Like Wonder Woman's plane, but with a self. Yeah. Right? And so you study the experience of being an object. What is that like? Where is the pain? How is your own self-judgment being projected into the mind of others? And we investigate, yeah, where is that tension, that congealing? We try to live a life. What kind of life would we have to live in order to sense that you cannot be found out? So there's a way in which, okay, you know, no secrets. No secrets. No shame. No secrets. First step is you can't be found out. Second step is you cannot be found. Cannot be found. There's nothing to see here. And I honestly don't think I'd be able to teach if I felt like myself was exposed all the time. Yeah, I feel both actually very deeply known and also invisible, cannot be found. Offer this for your consideration. Yeah, and wish you to the questioner, if they're here, they ever hear this, sending my love. Okay, thank you all.